the stuff I hear from this chair.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Mike Del Tufo at his peak. Del Tufo has a faster burst than Lawrence Taylor.
100%. My brother Frank couldn't catch me. I was one of the fastest kids around. That's all I could do is run and roller skate.
Today's guest, host of Peacock's Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, Vikings linebacker Za'Darius Smith, from Amazon Freebies Troppo, actor Thomas Jane, plus your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now...
My brother Frank couldn't catch me.
It's Rich Eisen.
Yeah, it's always great to start a show with a laugh. Why not? That's the way we try to roll here every single day on the Rich Eisen Show, whether you're listening to us on the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network, Sirius XM 85, the Odyssey app, or right here on NBC Sports on Peacock. And those who are watching us can see what the folks on radio can't see, which is I am wearing a fantastic plum zip-up sweater just for the middle of this month. It's the middle of the week, middle of the month. I mean, like, we're right down the middle, or right straight down the middle. Right. Hopefully, like everybody who tees off in the PGA Championship tomorrow will be. Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. How are you, sir?
I'm all right.
Good to see you, DJ Mikey D.
Good to see you, Rich.
Good to see TJ Jefferson lighting the candle. Any pearls of wisdom today for you, TJ?
Well, real quick, can I give a shout out? One of my best friends from high school, Dougie Peffer. New head coach of the Altoona High School men's basketball team. I just want to tell him, congrats, man. That's beautiful.
DJ Dougie Peff?
Well, he was the milkman.
Oh, he's the milk dad? Oh.
That was his nickname back in high school, was the milkman, because he delivered.
Is that right?
Yeah, and now he just got named head basketball coach Altoona High. So okay. Shout out to him.
Shout out to Peff Daddy. Just upgrading the nickname.
Hey, just quit while you're at it.
I'm sorry, Rich. I know every morning you don't know where I'm going, and you got to stay on your toes. But that's why you're nominated, my friend.
Is that right?
You know, that's why you're nominated.
That's why working with Michael Irvin will do that for you. You got to stay on your toes. We've got some great stuff in store today on this program. First up, Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, talking about everything going on in the world of the National Football League. Za'Darius Smith. One of the best defenders the league has seen in the last few years since he was taken out of Kentucky. Green Bay Packers put him on the field, and then he went and seemed like he was going to Baltimore, and then did a reverse and went to Minnesota. So he will be calling in from, I'm assuming, the land of a thousand lakes. We'll talk a little bit of tech in the NFL world. Our friend from Zebra Technologies, Bill Burns, calling in. He and Zebra were so generous once again to donate to Run Rich Run, so we'll catch up with him. And then the new show on Amazon Freebie, which is what IMDb TV has been renamed. Amazon Freebie's Troppo is the new show starring Thomas Jane.
Nice.
And he will be in studio.
I know.
Guy who played Mickey Mantle in the Billy Crystal film. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
61 with the asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
And then Boogie Nights, one of our favorite films of all time. All I will say is, for fans of the endeavor we do with our celebrity guest, Celebrity True or False, any fans of the Celebrity True or False world, and there are many, certainly on our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show, on our Facebook page, where that does very well, at Rich Eisen Show there. Mm-hmm. This could be one of my favorites. We've unearthed some great stuff. Certainly from behind the scenes of Boogie Nights that does not involve any prosthetics, but it's going to be good stuff coming up later on in hour number three when he stops by in studio. I did say the word.
Prosthetics.
I'm assuming, Chris, I'm all right. Had to do with last night's basketball endeavors that we saw on the Worldwide Leader in Sports, having nothing to do with the draft lottery. Where Anderson Varejão, as predicted, looked completely lost.
He's like, what am I doing here?
Who am I and what am I doing here?
That's your line, buddy.
Uh-huh. So
I just like Sabonis when the Kings got into the top four. He was just like,
giggling.
Hey.
Everything
looked, Sacramento.
Everything looked copacetic for your Celtics, certainly in the first half of that game last night, and certainly without Marcus Smart, who was out due to injury, and then we learned Al Horford's out due to health and safety protocols, which is the the version the NBA and many sports leagues use involving COVID-19.
Yeah, so here's my quick take on on last night. You know, you're out two starters. You just played one of the most physical, grueling seven-game second-round series of all time.
Yes.
And you're going on the road, the one seed who's been sitting for 5 days. You're not expecting to win game one, okay? So the fact, the big overall scheme of things, you lose game one, that's fine. We were kind of expecting it. Lost game one against Milwaukee. We're lucky to win game one against Brooklyn, okay? Worked out fine in those series. But when you look at how they played in the first half, a 13-point lead at one point, an 8-point lead at the half, guys are making shots, you put up 62 points against a really good defense, yeah, all right, maybe we can win this one. You know, you're kind of going high register, like maybe we can steal game one, and suddenly this is a different series. But to just come out in the third quarter like that, 22-2, you know, it's pretty deflating. You think maybe they were just running on adrenaline for the first half, but all things considered, looks like Marcus is going to play game two. No Al. Much rather have Marcus Smart than Al Horford. I think the Celtics are fine. I'm not going to overreact.
Oh, dude.
And
yeah, I mean, I'm not sitting here and saying this.
No, I mean, game one on the road. Slow down.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm just giving you my first blush reaction.
Of course.
So,
And then there's the other side of things here in the Miami Heat. And I guess this, you could say this series involves two of the best players in the NBA who have superstar status that doesn't get it afforded to them enough. Number zero in your Celtics and Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Butler of the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler of the Miami Heat, 17 of his 41 in the third quarter that, as you just mentioned, flipped the entire script of game one. And his stat line, 41 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals and 3 blocks.
That's a day at the office.
I mean,
man.
Just a man's game, dude.
Yeah.
41-9-4, 9-5-4-3 is incredible.
Yeah, shout out to the Sixers for letting him go, Rich.
That might be a powerball. Like 41's the powerball there, you know. So
I'm going to write that down.
And without the 41, that's a hell of a superfector. 9-5-4-3.
Ew.
Jimmy Butler, man. Guy who needed to be separated from his coach just about a month plus ago.
They're 15-6 since that moment.
And they are really, really good. And then when Jimmy Butler plays like this, they're championship quality. Mm-hmm. And then there's the way that they're constructed, as you know, I've liked for quite some time. I have.
That's a fact.
I have liked them for
the
way that Riles has put this team together.
I like how you phrase that.
You wouldn't give up anybody for that.
I would give up
no one
for nobody. Certainly. Say don't break up the bubble team for Giannis.
Rich, if they do win a championship again,
it'll be tough for me to be held back. Man. I know. But again, as I pointed out to Chris, it's just one game and we'll see how it all works. And this could be one of those Donnybrooks. And even after the game, Eric Spoelstra's talking about how two of the best two-way players in the game today going against each other. Because it's amazing is that when Tatum's got the ball in his hand, it's Butler on him and vice versa. And it's great to see. That's what we want to see as NBA fans. We want to see the best take on the best or try to beat the best. And last night, Butler was that guy. And it didn't feel that way at halftime, but Butler was that guy. And he became that guy. But just the way that this team is constructed, I've said this before, I'll say it again. This guy could play for me. PJ Tucker does all the dirty stuff, man. He does it. He gets the rebound when you need him to. He plays defense when you need him to. Makes those threes. Towards the end of the game, you know, a couple times.
Oh, I know. We had
Celtics
it.
Made Whoa, some threes. Like, cut the sun, makes
10.
It three.
What are we going to do here?
Well, it was higher register, 7 point.
Well, yeah.
Well, three and seven. And then P.J. Tucker hits a three. And it's just like when P.J. Tucker hits a three also, not just when he hits a three, it's one of those every one of his threes is a deflating three because he's literally the guy that you will always say, you take it.
Right.
If you beat me, I've got to tip my hat.
Kind of like Grant Williams.
And then he keeps beating you no matter what team he's on.
Yeah.
I mean, he only had one three, but it, you know.
I know.
It was a big one.
But he always comes out with them.
Yeah. And that's after he hurt his ankle in the first half, had to change his shoes.
Is he like the Robert Horry of his generation, you know?
No, Rich.
Is he the Ken Norton Jr. where he just switches teams and he'll just win it anyway?
That
again?
Might be a little bit better. Yeah.
Could that be better? Yeah,
that could be it.
The thing about that moment, too.
You Rich, like that one?
I do like
Pritchard
that.
Pritchard hits a three. It's a seven-point game. And the thing is, like, Ime Udoka was kind of waving the white flag. He had sent some scrubs to the bench. And then he hits the three. He's like, back to the bench. It's
because you can't.
Three to go.
It was like 90 seconds to go. Yeah. And you just couldn't put the scrubs in yet. You couldn't tap out just yet. But then they did because the Heater are not going to beat themselves. So I enjoyed game one. That was a good game one.
Yeah.
And now tonight it's game one between the Mavericks and the Warriors. My Warriors.
Yours, thank you.
My Golden State Warriors tonight. No one seed, no two seed. It's 1-2 in the East, and then 3-5.
Six,
right?
Five?
Yeah, it's five. Right. It was the Heat, the Jazz and the Mavs were the first round series. So it's now Luka taking center stage tonight, and I can't wait to watch that one. Mavs were the four, pardon me.
Okay.
So that's 3-4-1 and 1-2 in the other. So I look forward to that. I was having a good time last night watching that game, and it was a good time. A couple things we're going to talk about. Oh, is Pat Beverly still talking? How about that? Wow. Dude.
How long is this a 10-day? Did he sign up to
a 10-day contract?
It's a 5-day, I think. You know,
he's still talking.
He's still going.
Good for him, man. This is
wow.
He's just talking and giving his opinions on everybody who is beating him. They should. You know what he should do? He should sit on a couch, literally on a couch. They should sit him on a couch because part of this feels like it's therapy, and also it's where he is.
Yeah. I saw a tweet last night. Okay. Someone was like, "Hey, the next generation of NBA players in the media of." Pat Bev and Draymond is sure going to be something.
But Draymond has got rings. Draymond has rings, plural.
True, but Barkley doesn't have any.
Yeah, but Barkley is one of the 25 greatest basketball players of all time.
Draymond's going to the Hall of Fame.
I know.
I feel like I sound like that umpire in that YouTube video with Earl Weaver. You're going to go to the Hall of Fame for what?
For what?
I can't repeat what he says next. For effing up World Series? That's why you're going to the World
By the way, Rich,
that's just I said it the other day. I'm like, where's the line of disrespect and analysis? And I think maybe Pat, he keeps getting the reps. He'll find that line, and if he finds that line, he can be really good at this. But he's just throwing flame, and the shows in which that traffics well, I think he's made for, but. He's still playing.
Now you got to go out next year against some of these guys, and you know,
man, I did not hear what he's saying today. But the last couple days,
well, yesterday
he's smiling now with what I'm seeing. He's laughing. He just came across as angry and disrespectful to me.
He was challenging Windhurst this morning about something. He was okay, you know,
and.
By the way, Rich, you know,
nobody can just show the resume, right? You can't just go resume.
By the way, you're saying that. A lot of it's Pat Beverly. I'm a Pat Beverly on the court fan. I like what he brings, but no one really ever is in the Pat Beverly corner like Brockman. But the other day you made the comment about what has Pat Beverly done in comparison to Chris Paul. So many comments all took Pat Beverly's side.
On our YouTube page?
Yeah, and I don't know if it was, they were like, well, what have you done, Eisen? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. None of you people ever... We're on Pat Beverly's side now all of a sudden. So I don't know if it's really that much Chris Paul dislike out there or people or Pat Bev is resonating with folks. I'm not sure.
What have I ever done? I never understand that sort of going back at what have I ever done? Of course I haven't played NBA basketball. I didn't play college basketball. I was terrible in the rec league. You know, I mean, that's why I talk about it for a living. So
I was shocked to see a lot of
what I'm saying is when you come in on television, Now you're in my lane. Now you're in my world. I have every right to be critical.
25 years in the game, Rich.
Of what somebody's saying about somebody and how they say it and how they broadcast it. That's absolutely my area of expertise. And even if I haven't played anything, I still have the ability to critique or opinionate or talk. And as long as you do it in a rational, sane manner, I'm fine with it. And, well, that's what I'm trying to do. I can put my head on the pillow just fine.
Yeah. I mean,
that's why I don't read those answers. Like, what have I ever done? Nothing. I'll be honest. I've done nothing on a basketball court. Nothing. But I can see what Chris Paul has done and what Patrick Beverley has done. And I saw how Beverley said it.
Yep.
And as I said, it was a fascinating watch. On occasion, he's made me laugh the last couple of days. And the way he said it was fascinating on occasion, funny, but then it would be awkward. It's kind of like uncomfortable. I don't respond well to that sort of broadcasting style, or and even Matt Barnes.
Yeah,
Who has proclaimed to say, "Bring all the smoke." It was too much smoke for him.
Too much.
It smoked out Matt Barnes. Pat Beverley smoked out Matt Barnes.
That's impossible. Only Snoop can do that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
All right, let's take a break here. Mike Florio, when we come back on the Rich Eisen Show, Deshaun Watson in the NFL chit-chatting, apparently. What's that all about? And we just like talking the NFL. That's my lane.
Let's do it.
One of my many lanes. See, that's why I don't read... I don't read comics. Well, I don't know why you do.
I like to get you riled up.
All right, thank you. That's next on the Rich Eisen Show. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in store. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here on our Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio outfit, along with NBC Sports on Peacock, NBC Sports Audio, Sirius XM Channel 85. Joining us here is a man who kicks things off every single day, and then at certain parts of the year ends it every single day on NBC Sports on Peacock. The host of PFT Live, the creator of Pro Football Talk, and the author of Playmakers, which is still available where all books are sold. Mike Florio back here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. How you doing, Mike?
Rich, I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you. I love the Peacock conversation. Mm-hmm. I know the terrestrial audience didn't get to hear it. But the good news for me,
yes,
since we're no longer on over-the-air FCC-regulated radio, I was talking to DP about this yesterday, Sims and I have been testing the limits of what we can say before we get a phone call from somebody higher on the food chain.
Yeah, you guys are working blue, aren't you, Mike? Mike, you guys are working blue on occasion,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Did you guys know this?
Sims always lives blue. He doesn't have to work it. That's just him being him. And he's starting to have a bad influence on me after 5 years. So we've been dropping a few from time to time, and nobody has said anything. So like Dan said, he and Keith Olbermann used to do it on SportsCenter late night to see if the executives were watching, and they just came to the conclusion that they weren't.
Well,
so maybe that's what's happening with us.
Stuart Scott and I always talked about how we wanted to do a pay-per-view SportsCenter where we could say whatever we wanted to say and use whatever words we wanted to use. And boy, we never got to do that, obviously. But you got to pick and choose your spots. Which story or player has caused you guys to curse more lately?
Well, Mike? Probably Tom Brady, just because he's everywhere. And that's a point Sims made today that I think is a valid one. When you look at all the stuff Brady's doing, he's still playing. He's got the $375 million deal with Fox that is looming whenever he finally retires. He's got the Netflix greatest roast of all time series. He's an executive producer, and he's the subject of the first roast. He's got the movie he's executive producing about the four octogenarians who go to Atlanta to watch him play, or Houston to watch him play Atlanta in Super Bowl 51, I think it is. I mean, he's everywhere. At what point is he overexposed? At what point is there a natural backlash because people have reached their lifetime limit of Tom Brady?
Never.
How about this? How about this, though, Mike? Let's just put it this way. Even with everything that you just said, and I'm sure there's more to come, too, because we're not even talking about his clothing line and everything else and his outstanding social media game that puts him on our timeline every now and then. That still hasn't even swung the pendulum back from the first 20 years of his career where he did nothing and he hardly said anything. And all he did was just the Patriot way. And I think we're just seeing him let his freak flag fly a little bit. And maybe we're seeing a side of Brady that we're going to see more of when he's in our living rooms in front of 40 to 50 million other households on big Fox games. We're coming.
He is that kid that went to college after growing up in the house without a drop of alcohol anywhere to be seen and just goes crazy, right?
Yeah.
Freshman year.
Yeah.
Drinking everything he can find, making up for lost time.
Yeah.
And you're right, the 18 years of silence maybe helps people deal with the fact that he's everywhere now, but he's everywhere now, and he keeps finding new places to show up. It's just amazing, and there will be a critical mass at some point, I think, if he just keeps popping up everywhere and anywhere that we happen to be paying attention.
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. In the, I guess, more serious quarterbacking world right now, the NFL and Deshaun Watson are having a sit-down confab about his 22 civil cases right now. That's happening this week?
It's happening this week, and they've got to make a decision, and they've got to understand that there's a timeline that's created by the procedure that the NFL adopted in 2020. It's kind of a sandwich between the commissioner, an outside person, and the commissioner. The league will propose a suspension. There's an independent disciplinary officer hired and paid jointly by the league and the union that will investigate, presumably have a hearing, issue a decision on what suspension or discipline, if any, there will be. Then the commissioner has the exclusive appeal jurisdiction, which means he can, in theory, as long as there's any discipline imposed on Deshaun Watson. Let's say the league says we want to put, I'm just throwing out an example here for illustration.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the league says we want him out for a whole year. Disciplinary officer says, it's one game. The commissioner on appeal can say, it's a year, and that's it. Final binding, boom, bang the gavel, and see you later, Deshaun Watson. But whatever plays out, it's going to take time. See, I think they're setting this up for next Friday, Memorial Day weekend, a little bad news dump on the three-day weekend, what they propose the punishment to be, and then the disciplinary officer would kick in after that. And this all gets wrapped up by Labor Day weekend, so everyone will know whether or not he's going to be playing week one, or if not week one, when he'll be back.
Hmm. That's your timeline for this thing, huh?
I think it makes sense. They got to start doing something. At some point, you know, the NFL doesn't like to make a decision, Rich, until it has to. But at some point, the mere fact of delay is the mistake. I know they don't want to step in it by doing something prematurely, but at some point you have to know when you need to move. And I think they owe it to the Browns fans, to the opponents who have to figure out who are we going to be facing, and also to those seven sportsbook partners out there that would like to put the Browns back on the board. We don't have the Browns futures bets. We'd like to make a little money off the people that want to put some money on the Browns either to make the playoffs or not, to win over or under whatever their win total is going to be. They're off the board on that. There's no win total for the Browns yet because we don't know who the quarterback's going to be.
But does the league and has everything been does the league know everything? Is the overarching question? And let me backfill a little bit with you, Mike Florio. And it has all the depositions between Watson and his accusers taken place. Because if I'm the NFL, last thing I want to do is make a determination, start this entire process that you just talked about, and then find out something in one of those depositions that makes my ruling or the league's ruling look lenient. And a perfect example is what I read on your site through your Twitter account at Pro Football Talk, that there of an excerpt from one of the depositions, the first accuser of Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson admitting, yeah, he did send her a text to apologize because he saw her tearing up after their massage, hoping that he sending a text saying, I hope you can still work. We can still work together again. And of course, it leaves a question of anybody who's reading this saying, what happened to make somebody cry and him to acknowledge it through a text because it was so obvious? That's what I'm saying. I mean, is this all done? Does the NFL know everything in time for next Friday?
And that's a great point. They're not going to know everything until the 22 cases are resolved. And if they go to trial, it's going to take every bit of next offseason and beyond. You're talking about 22 different cases, 22 different juries, 22 different plaintiffs packed into an offseason. Good luck scheduling 22 trials, assuming that they aren't settled. He could have settled 18 of them last year. The Dolphins wanted all 22 to be settled before they would trade for him. 18 were ready to go, 4 held out, and Watson decided to not settle any unless he could settle all. I think in hindsight, he probably, if he were being candid, would say, it would have been nice to knock this group of 22 cases down to 4 cases, a little easier to manage. But, Rich, because of what you said, that's why I think there's a chance that what they'll do is make a decision on punishment based on what they already know, what has been admitted, what they learned from their conversations with the accusers and with Watson, what he admits to, what he doesn't. Remember, Rusty Harden, his lawyer, admitted last year that some of these massage therapy sessions he would line up via Instagram would become consensual sexual encounters. That may be enough for the league to say, we're troubled by this pattern of behavior. We think intervention is required. A lot of the reasoning that applied to Ben Roethlisberger back in 2010 when he got suspended 6 games, reduced to 4, with no arrests, with no charges, with civil cases eventually settled. I think what they could do is suspend him a certain amount now and leave the door open for the possibility, based upon how the civil cases go and how they're resolved and what the verdicts are or aren't, to take action again later. They kind of did that with Antonio Brown in 2020. He was suspended 8 games for a variety of off-field misdeeds. He still had a pending civil lawsuit alleging that he had engaged in sexual assault and rape, and they said, we're going to leave the door open pending what happens here. So I think it's kind of a mixed bag. It's kind of a half measure, but I think it makes sense. It deals with what they know now, and it leaves the door open to deal with what they may learn later.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk here on the Rich Eisen Show. So let's open the door in a couple of offshoots of what's happening right now. Again, Deshaun Watson and the league meeting with one another, an interview happening between the league and Deshaun Watson. And while we're waiting for the results of that, the ripple effect of his contract, his $230 million all-guaranteed contract. I've got Za'Darius Smith coming on in hour number 2. Your reporting has already pointed out how other contracts, Von Miller being one of them, helped kind of upset the conversations between Smith and the Ravens to the point where the Ravens were like, yeah, you keep coming back to us. We're not going to pay that. He winds up in Minnesota. We already had Brett Veach on last week, and he basically admitted the Christian Kirk contract, the Devontae Adams contract, totally blew up what was going on between the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill. Is there something up with the Cardinals and Kyler Murray because of what was paid to Deshaun Watson? How are the ripple effects based on your knowledge so far?
Well, look, we've heard from multiple owners who have said openly that they're troubled by the fact that Watson gets a fully guaranteed 5-year, $230 million contract because agents are going to turn around and expect the same thing for other quarterbacks. And look, most franchise quarterbacks get every penny of their contracts, or they get renegotiated and they get a raise before the contracts expire. But when you put that much of a guarantee into a deal, you have to put a certain amount of money into escrow. It becomes a very expensive proposition. It affects your liquidity as an owner. It's just something that the league didn't want to do. So the Browns have crossed a bridge now that other teams may get pulled across. And the Kyler Murray thing has really died down. I think that Murray and the Cardinals have kind of found a way to reach an awkward truce, at least for now, and then maybe they're going to try to work out a contract later this summer. Because I think that Murray made it sufficiently clear that if another team out there was interested, they would have made a run. And I don't think anybody made a serious run. I think for the same reason the Cardinals are concerned about paying him a ton of money now, other teams are going to be concerned too. Durability, how his game is dramatically limited if he can't put the mobility into action. We saw him in the playoff game where he just wasn't running like he usually did. He had that ankle thing that I think bothered him for the rest of the year. And he was ordinary. He looks a lot shorter when he can't just take off like the Roadrunner whenever he chooses to do so. So I think that they've reached an understanding and they're going to try to work something out. Now, can they come to a middle ground? Can they find a number in a market that now has like a $30 million spread from the highest paid quarterback to the 10th highest paid quarterback? I don't know. But I think they're going to work it out. But the Deshaun Watson contract, obviously, is a major data point in any quarterback contract negotiation going forward, and it's going to make it harder for some of these other deals to get done.
And then what about Mayfield? You know, I have been vocal here saying that I don't think there's any way that Humpty Dumpty could be put back together again with the Browns and Mayfield, should the Browns hold on to him as an insurance for a Watson suspension. I just think that that's folly. That's just not going to happen. You know, stranger things have, I understand. But Mayfield hasn't said anything lately. Any idea what his camp's strategy is on waiting out whatever the Browns are trying to wait on as well?
Well, Mayfield hasn't said anything directly, but ESPN.com had that hashtag long read about 13 days ago, with chapter and verse details of things that bug Baker Mayfield, with fingerprints all over it from Mayfield and people close to him. I know we're, you know, source guessing is frowned upon in this business, but I don't care.
Right.
It clearly was stuff coming from Mayfield's camp. And the one thing, Rich, that made me think the way that you do, that Humpty Dumpty is busted to smithereens, Mayfield and or people close to him believe that they left him in the game Week 17 at Pittsburgh, prime time, when he was struggling to make him look bad, to make it easier to pivot over to Deshaun Watson or someone else. If he believes that, if he truly believes that they pulled that maneuver, I don't know how you come back from that. And if the Browns are thinking, we may need this guy all year, we don't know, maybe we need him, you better be kissing his butt now to get him back on board with the idea that there could be a mutual benefit to be served here. Hey, Baker, Seattle, Carolina, Cleveland, where's your best chance to have the kind of year that sets you up for a big contract in 2023? It's Cleveland. So let's find a way to work together, and we'll give you your freedom after this season, and you can go and you can cash in. I don't know, like you said, I don't know that Humpty Dumpty gets reconstructed, because I think too much damage has been done to that relationship.
Well, and certainly you want to talk about how damaged the relationship is. If your supposition is the truth, for the lack of a better phrase, is in fact what happened, where Mayfield's camp thinks he was left in week 17 to struggle because it gives the Browns an easier public front to go pivot to Deshaun Watson. I mean, Deshaun Watson essentially pivoted away from the Browns in the middle of the sweepstakes, right? I mean, that there was a 24-hour period. There was a 24-hour.
That's how we got the $230 million fully guaranteed. The Browns are like, right. Oh, crap, we can't go back to Mayfield now. He hates us. What are we going to do?
Exactly.
Let's up the ante and let's get Deshaun Watson back on board with us.
Right. So there was never a guarantee that Watson would ever look in the direction of the Browns. They were kind of in last place until, you know, the escrow account got opened up. So that would strike me as a very poisoned relationship if you're parsing out week 17 moments by the coaching staff. And Stefanski, who I think is certainly in dealings that I've had with him, a straightforward, straight up guy. It's just maybe as simple as, hey, they told him we're going to look at other people. That pissed him off. And then they fell all over themselves for Watson. And that pissed him off to the point where he said goodbye to Cleveland and front-loaded his goodbye, right? Like told Seinfeld, I'm not breaking up with you. You're not breaking up with me. I'm breaking up with you. all of that. That's why I don't know how it's possible to put that all back together again. And then what's Seattle thinking? Just like they really are waiting for this to play out while Pete has his competition that he adores. I don't know. How Mayfield would even fit in.
I think Pete and John Schneider realize that they can just sit back and wait and sit back and wait and sit back and wait, and maybe they can steal Baker Mayfield if they even want him.
Exactly.
There's nothing to suggest they want him, but that may be part of the poker face that they're trying to project. Then meanwhile, they love Geno Smith. I mean, people think, oh, Drew Locke will be the quarterback. He's got to beat out Geno. Pete has said multiple times Geno has the lead. Geno knows the offense, and Geno played well last year when Russell was hurt. There was nothing like a blowout win over the Jaguars where Geno was 20-24 to get Russell Wilson back on the field, lickety-split, even before he was ready. They were chanting Geno's name in that Thursday night game against the Rams. So I think Pete would love to be able to win games with Russell Wilson's understudy, with Russell Wilson in Denver struggling against the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Raiders, and the rest of the AFC.
Before I let you go, there's still Jimmy Garoppolo that looms over everything that we talk about with Baker Mayfield and the Browns, because there's another guy who's actually got Super Bowl experience and last year took a team damn near to it, sitting out there. And the subtext of the conversation there is something I brought up to Steve Young when he called in earlier this week, Mike Florio, about Trey Lance not being ready and the rumors and the conjecture that the Niners just can't bring themselves to finally rip that Band-Aid off of Garoppolo and go to Lance. What are you hearing about that scenario in San Francisco as we're sitting here?
I've consistently heard concern that they're not convinced Lance is ready. And how do you know he's ready until he's your guy? Week in and week out. They haven't seen enough from him to make him think he's ready. They didn't see enough from him last year to be confident about thrusting him into the fray when they clearly would have done it if he had shown he was the best option. And from Garoppolo's perspective, the worst case scenario would be they show up for camp, they compete, Lance emerges as the starter, Lance steps up, Lance is ready to go. And then they go to Jimmy Garoppolo after the preseason. They say, hey, Jimmy, Lance is number one. You're number two. We can't pay number two $25 million. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to pay you $10 million to be the backup. And maybe we'll put some incentives in there, playing time, whatever, so you can earn some of it back if you end up playing more, if he gets injured or whatever. But you're the backup. You got to accept this deal. And if not, you're going to get cut. He's got no guarantees until he's on the roster for week one. And what do you do then? All the spots are taken. All the depth charts are filled. I think that's why Garoppolo, even more than Mayfield, because Mayfield at least has a guaranteed salary for this year at 18.8. Garoppolo's 25 is not guaranteed. Now, he's got a lingering injury guarantee of $7.5 million, but once he passes a physical, that goes away. After that, he's got no guarantee. So the sooner he can get out of there and land somewhere else, the better off he's going to be, because he could end up, she stands alone, right after Labor Day weekend with no home, no salary, no anything, if the 49ers keep him around long enough to come to the conclusion that Lance is ready.
Mm. Did you say cheese stands alone, Mike? Isn't that a line,
the cheese stands alone?
That's the farmer in the dell. You went farmer in the dell on me
right there.
I think. Okay, I just want to make sure.
You went Humpty Dumpty, so we're even.
That's right.
Hey, we had a long talk yesterday about Romper Room. I don't know if you remember Romper Room. I had forgotten about Romper Room.
Of course.
But I used to love at the end when they pull up that magic mirror and they start rattling off the names. And if they said your name, like, you know, because you were the only one in the world with that name when you were 4 years old, that makes your week when you heard your name at the end of the world.
I love it. I guess I should. I just had to pause, put a pin in our conversation real briefly when I heard that. But now,
were you rich? Richard or Richie when you were four?
Oh, I was Richard when I did something wrong in the house. Richie in grade school, and Dick behind my back. So that's probably what I was growing up. Not to my face. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself, Mike Florio. Thanks for the call, brother.
Always really
appreciate it. Everybody checks EC. See you, Mikey. Good spot, Mikey. There you go. Mike Florio, everybody, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Everybody should buy his book, Playmakers, and check him out on PFT Live every single day right here on Peacock.
Omar also said the cheese stands alone in The Wire.
Okay.
You know, that's my head.
Very good. Very good. All right. what do I want to pick out of that one to expound on? Okay, Trey Lance, let's do it. next on the Rich Eisen Show. I've got two cents on that subject matter. I've had enough of the Trey Lance slander. Enough.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Callaway Digits should create their longest irons ever with the new Rogue ST. They made their longest irons ever perform at the highest level for every player. There are four different types of Rogue ST irons that use artificial intelligence on high-strength 450 steel, the only irons ever to do so. There's one for your style of play. The Rogue ST Pro is for the low to mid single-digit handicappers. There's that incredible combination of speed, forgiveness, and all-around performance in the Rogue ST Max. Trust me, you're going to want to use that. If you're learning the game, if you're struggling to stay consistent, it really is so forgiving. There's the Max OS Lite, the most forgiving high launch iron. If you really want a wider sole, increased lightweight package for players with slower swing speeds, the Max OS is for mid to high handicappers. This is just all examples of how Callaway has thought through everything. No other irons perform like the new Rogue ST irons. Find your Rogue ST irons at callawaygolf.com/go rogue, please. So there's two things that the Niners want to do. There's one that's, it's sort of like a regular, like an NFL season or like a TV show. It's a week to week thing. It's like a smaller window of a storyline, and then there's the overarching storyline that goes from season to season. The storyline that's in a shorter time frame is one that kind of surprised everyone. A little plot twist to the 49ers in 2022 was Deebo Samuel saying, "I want out." And one thing that the Niners wanted to do with that, they have succeeded in. They've taken a lot of air out of the room. They've taken a lot of heat off the situation. That's what they wanted to do. That's what I thought they wanted to do. I thought they didn't want to trade him in a million years. Even heard Steve Young say earlier this week that he's one of one. He's like the perfect guy for their offense. If you could choose any guy in the league that fits their offense as perfectly as Deebo Samuel, there's nobody else. It's him. So check that box. They've done it. They've held on to him. And who's talking about it now? Nobody's paying attention to what Debo's Instagramming or tweeting. And we're not talking about who he's following or not. We're not on it. They've taken all of that out of the room.
Those were fun times, though.
Well, I mean, what, with his videos of him in the club and somebody had, you know, paid for the sign, you know.
Come back Deebo to the night and he was like.
No, none of that.
Like I said, we can still get tables at that club whenever you want to go. So,
sure.
So he's got a birthday coming up.
Yeah, I got a birthday coming up. Yeah, yeah. I mean, my nickname in college was Bottle Service.
Oh boy,
Richie Bottle Service.
I'm just lying.
I'm gonna use that,
please. So check that box. They've succeeded. Deebo's still a Niner. We're not talking about it. Hopefully, they're using this space, this quiet space, to get him happy and on the field. The other thing, it's now the overarching storyline season to season and how they're going to figure out Trey Lance. And the fact that Jimmy G's still a Niner, in my mind, has to do with the fact that he got surgery. I think he'd have been long gone if he was healthy. And people don't believe it. Because look what Jimmy G did last year. Trey Lance could not have done that. Trey Lance had an opportunity to do that, and he could not do that. So Jimmy G had to come in and save the day, even though every single time he threw it, everybody's, you know, heart was in their throat from the 49ers. I got texts and tweets from 49er fans, personal and followers, who are just like, oh, just make sure Jimmy doesn't throw it. And then after he threw it and actually had a good game, how about that Jimmy G? But I'm a little nervous for next time. That's how the Niners live with Jimmy G. Great until he's not.
That's a YP.
And that's why, yeah, YP. That's why they traded all them picks to go up to the third overall spot and take this kid. Now, at some point, the Niners are going to have to turn the keys of the car over to him. Everybody thought it could just be some smooth transition where, boom, he would come in and he'd be so damn good, Jimmy G would just never see the field again, and they just say, thanks for the memories, James. And last year, those moments, he had those opportunities, but guess what? He's still learning because he didn't have a lot of experience. He showed a lot of ability and flash at North Dakota State. But outside of that, it's all on what you think he can do and the upside that he has and the system that you put him in and the environment in which you place him, he can be successful. Niners fans don't want that possibility of having rookie or second-year, first-year starter bumps and turbulence. Guess what? Most teams deal with that. It's a rarity to not see the Seahawks with Russell Wilson, Chiefs with Mahomes, Chargers with Herbert. That's a rarity. Things usually look more like Tua or even the Bengals with Burrow. He got hurt. So guess what, 49ers fans? He's coming. He's coming. And you're going to have to throw him in the deep end of the pool in the NFC West where the defending Super Bowl champions live. And you're going to have to sink or swim. And you're going to hope that he's going to win more than not because he has Debo. He's got George Kittle, who's joining us later on this program later on this week. And at defense with Bosa and the rest of them. And a coaching staff that knows how to do it. That's why we were so surprised to see the Niners just trade everybody to go up and get somebody with the third overall pick in the draft, a rookie quarterback who they finally take, who hardly had any experience the year before. So get ready. And I think he'll do well. I really do.